Hey everyone, Into the Verse is sort of a new project here at Aleph Beta, and we'd really love your feedback. So if you're enjoying the show, or if there's something you don't enjoy about it, please send us an email at info@alephbeta.org and share your thoughts. We love your feedback. Okay, here's the show. Welcome to Into the Verse, where we share new and unexpected insights about the Parsha, diving deep into the verses to uncover the Torah's own commentary on itself. This week, I have a very special treat for you. Two extraordinary women, scholars here at Aleph Beta. Beth Lesh is going to present her research on Parshat Shlach to Rivki Stern. And I've got to tell you that it is one of the most dynamic and interesting conversations that I have listened to in a long time. I read the story of the spies every single year, kind of the way you watch those old horror movies where the woman walks into the alleyway, where the scary bad guy is, and it's just so obvious that she shouldn't walk into that alleyway. So it's like the entire theater is screaming, "Don't go in there!" That's what the story of the spies is like for me. But in another way, it's kind of mundane. I don't expect to get very much new out of the story of the spies. And as far as the Torah as a guidebook is concerned, a book that's supposed to have meaning and relevance to me, I'm not exactly sure what the takeaway is supposed to be for me. Next time I get sent on a spy mission, maybe I'm supposed to just say nice things about the land of Israel? That's my takeaway? Well, Beth Lesh did an extraordinary close read of the story of the spies. And if you're new to Torah, or if you've been studying for many years, I guarantee you'll be blown away by the incredible richness that Beth and Rivki discovered together. Here, take a listen.
So here we go. Parshas Shlach, I was reading through it last night, and I noticed some things that sounded familiar. So I kept digging, and I found more and more and more stuff. There really seems to be something here. I'm not sure what to make of it yet. I've got a lot of questions. So what I want you and me, Rivki, to do is to play with it all together. Rivki, what are the main elements in the story of the spies? How would you recount it?
So Parshat Shlach, right at the beginning of this week's Parsha, God tells Moshe, "Moshe, send out some people, and they're going to spy out the land of Canaan, which we're about to come to, the land that I'm going to give you, the people of Israel." And then Moshe basically does so. He sends out a bunch of people. He sends one person out from each tribe, and then they come back and they give a report to the whole people of Israel. And they say, "Oh my God, it was beautiful, but actually it was also a little bit scary." Mm-hmm. There were some intense fortifications, and they were like, "Actually, you know, the land is beautiful, but I don't think we're going to be able to handle this." Mm-hmm. And then the people basically freaked out.
Okay, so I'm going to say it back to you. And as I say this back to you, I want you to be thinking, where have I heard this before? Moshe takes these men and sends them on a mission. And what's the mission? The mission is that they're supposed to go see something. They're supposed mm-hmm. to see, and what else are they supposed to do?
They're supposed to see and then report back.
Exactly. They go, they come back, and when they come back, mourning ensues.
Uh-huh. Okay. I think I'm kind of getting a flavor here,
okay.
But keep going.
And one other thing, one other element that I'll point out to you, which is of those 12 men that got sent out on this mission, did all 12 of them do something wrong? Or
no.
So who were the good guys and who were the bad guys?
There were 10 sort of bad guys, and that was the representative of all of the tribes except for two tribes. Yehuda, whose representative, Kaleb ben Yefune, he actually stood up and said to the people of Israel, "Don't be scared, don't worry, we got this," when they seemed to be afraid. The other one was Yoshua, who was the representative of Ephraim. Mm-hmm. So the good guys here were the representatives from Yehuda and Ephraim, and the bad guys was everyone else.
Okay. 12 men, each one representing one of the B'nai Yisrael, go out on a mission. They're supposed to see something. They're supposed to bring back word. They come back. 10 of them do something terrible. 2 of them are innocent. And mourning ensues. What does this remind you of? Where else have you heard this before?
Okay, so I mean, the parallels don't exactly line up. And I think that's part of what we're going to explore if this is the correct story. But it feels like the sale of Joseph, right? It feels like when Yaakov, Israel, sent out Yosef to go find his other sons. And he said to him, "Oh, they're shepherding out there. Go and get them." And when he goes to find them, course, he is sold and it ends up in Egypt. And then when the brothers come home and they say, hey, actually, we think Yosef died. Of course, they're lying to their father, but basically disaster ensues.
Come with me to the story of the sale of Yosef, Bereishis 37, verse 14. Jacob sending Joseph on a mission. Lechna re'ei es shalom achecha ve'es shalom hatzon. So go and see the welfare of your brothers and the welfare of their flock. V'hashiveni davar v'yishlechehu me'emek chevron v'yaveh shchema. Bring back word. And he sends him out from the valley of Chevron and he comes to Shechem. So what words do you see in here already that remind you of the spies?
I mean, the first instinct to me is just shalach, mm-hmm. right? Our parsha starts with shalach lecha anashim, send out men. And in the same way, Bayishalchehu, mm-hmm. right? He sends him
awesome.
Out.
Awesome. So we've got shlach. Come with me to shlach and we'll see if we can find some of these words reappearing. Take a look at verse 18. What does he tell them to do? Go up into the mountains and...
Ureitem et haaretz, right? And you should see the land.
Good. So go. So I'm sending you. Okay. So do you see that same language of seeing?
So yeah, because right? if you verb? Go back to Yaakov, he says, Lechna re'ei, right? Go and see. Go and check on the welfare of your brothers and of the flock. Mm-hmm. But it uses the same language of re'ei. Go see this thing. Interesting.
Exactly.
Cool.
Exactly. Now come with me to verse, to Chaf Vav, to 26.
Uh-huh.
The spies go. And then they come back. And what do they do when they come back?
Vayishibo tam davar vet kol haida, right? And they bring back word mm-hmm. onto them and to the whole nation. And very cool. So if you go back into the story of Yaakov and Yosef, it's the same thing, right? So what happens? Vashivenu davar. Yaakov tells Yosef and bring back word. Report back to me afterwards. How's everything going? Now I see the next lines also, right? So what happens in the story of the spies in our parsha? Vayarum et pri haaretz. So what do? They don't only give back word, they show them the fruit of the land. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we know the story of Yaakov and Yosef, right? What happens when the brothers actually return? They show their father something.
Very nice.
Show him that bloody coat.
Very nice. They show him the
bloody
coat.
Sorry if I'm jumping the gun a little bit, but I'm getting excited.
And then what does Yaakov say when he sees the coat? What does he think happened on the basis of seeing that coat?
What the brothers want him to think, right? He thinks that he was killed.
Killed how?
Chaya ra'a achaltihu. Some sort of wild animal destroyed him and ate him.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now back to the story of the spies. What do they say about the land?
Oh, interesting. So when they're saying that basically they're like, this isn't worth it, we're going to get killed, we're going to get destroyed, the language they use is Ha'aretz asher avarnu ba'la torata, the land that we came to sort of check out. Eretz ocheret yoshbehahi. This is a land that eats its inhabitants, right? It's the same language. It almost makes it sound like the land is some sort of crazy animal that is just going to eat everyone. The same way this
exactly,
wild animal
exactly.
ate Yosef.
So this is a land that devours its inhabitants. And now let's to see some more of these parallels, because I'm telling you, Rivki, I was looking at this last night, and the more I looked, the more I saw. Okay, so now let's look at what happens. We already said, I gave you a heads up, there's a mourning that happens in reaction to the spies report, right? So let's take a look at, I think this is going to be in chapter 14 of Numbers. Right? So we see the first reaction from the people in the first verse there.
But he saw Kolayda. Vayitznu et kolam. So they all sort of lifted up their voices. Vayiplu ha'am balaylahu. And then they started crying. And they wept that mm-hmm, whole night.
Okay, so we've got crying. Come with me down to Pasuk Vav.
Okay, so that's when basically the two guys who we said were the good guys, which were Yehoshua and Kalev, they basically are distraught. So what do? Karu bigdehem. They tore their clothes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we've got crying. We've got tearing of clothes. Come with me down to verse 39. What else do they do in reaction?
Vayitablu ha'am me'od. And the people start mourning.
Crying, tearing of clothes, and mourning. Now come back to the sale of Joseph. Take a look at the way the Torah describes Yaakov's reaction. What does Jacob do?
Vayikra Yaakov simotav, right? As soon as he sees the bloody coat and he thinks that an animal has destroyed his son, he immediately tears his clothes. Vayitabel al bino, yamim rabim. And he starts mourning his son and he mourns for many, many days. And then the end of the verse says, Vayefk oto aviv, that his father just, he's weeping for him. He will not be consoled. He just continues to weep.
Mm-hmm.
Beth, very, very cool.
And one more thing. This is the thing that really, really, this is the thing that sealed the deal for me. Come with me back to Numbers, to verse 32.
Vayotziu dibata aretz. And the spies, after they came back, they spread this evil report about the land.
Awesome. Where else do we come across the word diba? Does that ring any bells for you?
Diba. I mean, I want to say my first instinct is the story of the sale of Joseph, but not because I actually know the content, but just because that's where I'm leaning towards.
Okay, all right. So you've got good gambling instincts, Rivki Stern.
Thank you.
The answer is we're in chapter 37, looking at the sale of Joseph. I want you to scroll, turn, flip up to the second verse in that parak.
Okay,
and tell me what
so
happens.
We go. This parak is chock full, right? At the end of it is the actual sale of Joseph. The beginning is also includes Joseph's dreams, right? Everything like that. Mm-hmm. So let me go back to the beginning. Ela toldot Yaakov. These are the toldot, the generations of Yaakov. Yosef ben Shiba Esrei Shana. Yosef was 17 years old. Haya roe et Echa Batzon. He was shepherding the flock with his brothers. V'hu na'ar et b'nei Bilha v'et b'nei Zilpa. And he was, I guess, a kid with the sons of Bilha and Zilpah, Nishe Aviv, the wives of his father, Vayave Yosef et dibatam ra'a el avihem. Yosef brings back a diba. Yosef brings back evil reports of them. He kind of like tells on them to his father.
Here's very the thing. Cool. This word diba, how many times do you think it appears in the whole Chumash?
I'm not very familiar with the word. So my guess, again, if my instincts are correct, is two. I'm guessing it appears
ding,
twice.
Ding, 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 ding. Yosef's report about his brothers and the spies' report about the land.
Pretty interesting stuff, Beth.
Yeah, and there's even more evidence than what we've gone into. It's really unbelievable. So I encourage anyone who's got time to sit and try to have fun with it. I think there's another conceptual parallel between these two sins, these two accounts, the sin of the spies and the sin of the sale of Joseph, which I think these pieces of evidence are pointing us to. We know that the sin of the spies led to a very specific and very tragic consequence. What was the tragic consequence of the sin of the spies?
It was the major delay. The entire nation died, and there was a 40-year delay before the people were allowed to enter the land of Israel, mm-hmm. right? Before the sin of the spies, the people were going to go straight into the land of Canaan, right? It was supposed to be a pretty quick journey. People were going to go straight in. But after the sin of the spies, basically God says to the people, look, you're obviously not ready for this. This is not going to happen. Instead, the entire nation has to die out, and their children, their descendants, they will be allowed into the land 40 years later. Mm-hmm.
So what I'm hearing you say is God has a plan for the people, and the plan involves coming to his land and settling it and flourishing in his land. But then there's a sin committed amongst Bnei Israel, and as a result of that sin, God has to intervene, and he institutes a waiting period. He says, y'all are not ready for this. You need a little while longer before you can come to my land and settle in it. How much longer? 40 years. What's the parallel? Is there a parallel to the sale of Yosef?
This is so, so cool.
Yeah? You like
it? Right? Because let me just think it out and tell me if I'm missing pieces or tell me if this wasn't exactly what you had in mind. But basically, what was happening with the sons of Yaakov? Yaakov was building a family in this land, right? He was able to bring everyone back from the house of Laban, and he was building this nation. But then after the sale of Joseph, when Joseph goes down to Egypt, becomes a powerful person, basically the entire family ends up moving down. They all leave the land of Canaan. Mm-hmm. It's like God sort of saying, like, look, this clearly wasn't meant to be. If it weren't for the sale of Joseph, right, we can only imagine what could have been. The nation of Israel could have started. There would be no Exodus. There would be no slavery. There would be no need to bring the people through the Midbar, through the 40-year journey. There would be no sin of the spies. None of this would have happened without chapter 37 of Genesis, without the sale of Joseph. And it's crazy that, I mean, it's depressing, but it's a fascinating thing to imagine what could have been. And then in some ways that
it's tragic.
Replay.
Come with me to the beginning. Again, the beginning of the chapter of the sale of Joseph. And Rabbi Foreman makes this point, and I love this. Vayeshev Yaakov be'eretz Megurei Aviv be'eretz Canaan. Rabbi Foreman says, right. Look at this language. There's a few different ways that you can say to settle, and two of them appear in this verse. What do you see?
There's Vayeshev Yaakov, and there's Be'eretz Migurei Aviv.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Lagur and Leshevet, how are those words different?
Vayeshev is living. Vayeshev isn't visiting. Vayeshev isn't like kind of putting up a tent. Vayeshev is building a foundation. Vayeshev is building a house and saying, good, I found it. I found the place I'm retiring. I found the place I'm raising, not only raising my children, I'm going to be hosting my grandchildren. Vayeshev is really living there, and this is your future, and this is what you're building. But Eretz Megurei Aviv, Gur, right, to Gur, is sort of visiting, right? And what Yaakov is saying here is like, look, what I'm getting to do is what my father, my grandfather, they never got to do this, right? They lived in Canaan, but they were more visitors. They didn't get to really, really settle this land. Yeah.
If you're just here in 37 and you've never read the Torah before and you get up to this verse, this is where you think the dream is going to be realized. You think that Yaakov is about to start the dream. And then what happens in the very next verse? Diba. The Diba, and it unravels coming out of the Diba, right? I wonder if that's not part of what we're supposed to be learning from these stories. There was the sin of Yosef, and the Torah isn't clear about the fact that the descent to Egypt and the slavery for 400 years in Egypt was a consequence of the sale of Joseph. But I wonder if that's what these parallels aren't telling us. That we went down to Egypt, we stayed there as slaves, and the 400 years weren't enough. We showed that when it came to the sin of the spies. We needed 40 more. We needed one more generation to die out before we were really ready to actually inherit the land.
Yeah, I mean, it's devastating to think about, right? In the same way that it's almost like Yaakov's ready to settle and God says to him, like, look, I know you wanted to do this and I wanted it for you also, but you know, look at what's happening around you. Clearly, we're not at that stage yet. I'm sorry, but it's not time.
Yeah.
And it's almost like the same, right? It's like Moshe is maybe the Yaakov character here. Moshe's, and God sort of saying, like, look, I wanted the people to be ready also. I also wanted to bring them into Canaan and for this whole period to be over. But you know what? Look, they're not ready yet. We need a little bit more time.
Here's the thing, Rifki. The textual parallels are there. I think they speak for themselves. And the consequences of the sins seem to be the same. The consequences of both sins seem to be that these are key turning points in the history of Bnei Yisrael, where God has a plan for his people, but the people commit some sin that causes God to intervene and institute a waiting period before they can really settle his land and flourish as a family. The consequences are the same. But what I still don't understand is, how are the sins fundamentally similar? How is Yosef speaking Diba about his brothers, bringing an evil report about his brothers? How is that fundamentally similar to the sin of the spies speaking Diba about the land?
It's interesting, right? I mean, I don't know the answer, but right now I'm thinking, right? So what is it that's so devastating about speaking ill of other people, right? Mom, you won't believe what my sister did to me, right? What's the problem there? Why does that bother my mom? You know, why is that so fundamentally upsetting? Because my sister and I are supposed to be in relationship with each other. Our job is not to sort of be telling on each other. Yeah, sometimes my sister's going to do things that bother me. I'm going to do things that bother her. The reason that's problematic, though, is because we're supposed to love each other, right? That relationship is one that's meant to be sort of based on love. And when, this is just a theory, I'm just sort of thinking this out. When Yosef goes to Yaakov and says, like, look at what these guys are doing, look what's going on, whatever, he's sort of breaking apart their relationship. He's thinking about his relationship with Yaakov. Maybe he's like, oh, I want to be the favorite. I want to be there. Like, there's something there, but he's ruining the relationship between brother and brother. And that breakdown, I think, is painful. It's painful for Yosef. It's painful, obviously, for his brothers, right? For the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah. And it's also painful for Yaakov, because Yaakov wants his sons to be in relationship with each other. And it's painful for God, right? Like, meaning, this whole thing, right, so much of Torah is about building relationships. Relationships with one another, relationships within our family, relationships outside our family, relationships with God. And this sort of Diba is a breakdown of relationship. And it's not exactly the same thing, but in Shlach, right, when the spies go and they come back to the people of Israel and they have these evil reports about the land, it's like they're breaking relationship between people and land. We have a relationship with family and we have a relationship with land. And when we bring Diba about this land, what we're saying is, hey God, you promised this to us? No. There is a problem with this relationship. There is a breakdown here. It's devastating.
Oh, one other parallel to add to the mix. We didn't even get into this. How many bad guys are there in the story of the Sin of the Spies?
Oh my God, you're right. Okay, very cool. I was thinking this before and I thought we'd get there. The Sin of the Spies has 10 bad guys. I want to almost say like one neutral-ish guy, right? Who is Yoshua, who's like maybe a little bit quiet, but definitely is not one of the bad guys. And then Kalev is the one who really stands up. This is the one who really stands up against these 10 and says, no, 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 guys, you don't understand. This is totally doable. Hey, everyone else, entire nation, we got this. We got this. And in the story of the sale of Joseph, there also seem to be 10 bad guys of the 12 brothers, right? There are 12 brothers, but obviously Yosef isn't one of the bad guys. Yosef is the victim, right? Yosef is the one who is sold. And Binyamin, right? We have this sort of a fundamental assumption that Binyamin was basically too young and was not part of the sale of Joseph in any way. He wasn't there. Plus, you know, it makes sense. Binyamin and Yosef are full quote unquote brothers. They share a mother. What's interesting though is also the contrast, right? And we got to explore this. It's pretty interesting to think that Kalev, who is sort of the hero of the spy story, Kalev is from the tribe of Yehuda.
And who's Yehuda, right? In the Sale of Yosef story?
Yehuda is the one who says to his brothers, Luchu benim kareinu Yishmaelim. Come, let's sell him to the Yishmaelim, right? Let's not kill him. You know, what's the point of that? Let's do something smarter. Let's actually sell him. Let's make a little money. Let's make a little profit about it. What is interesting, though, is that now in Shlach, it's Kalev from the tribe of Yehuda, who is the leader of Leah's children, stands up with Yoshua, who is from the tribe of Ephraim, from Yosef. So we have Yosef, we have the son of Yosef, and we have the son of Yehuda standing up together, trying to help, trying to solve this. And there's something really, I don't know, I mean, it's so sad to think about what's about to come for the people of Israel, but there's something redemptive about that, mm-hmm. just that. It gives us a glimmer of sort of hope mm-hmm. of repairing this devastation. Mm-hmm.
They're saying, we're not going to speak Diba this time. Diba set us off all those generations ago. This time we're going to stand together. It's not going to be brother against brother. It's not going to be me, Yehuda, casting you, Yosef, into a pit and selling you to make a little bit of extra money. This time we're going to stand up.
Unfortunately, though, there is Diba, right?
But maybe we're missing something. We think about the story of the spies as being so tragic. You know, the spies did this terrible thing. God comes in with this egregious punishment. But it just makes me wonder, maybe there's something a lot more hopeful in the story. Maybe the point here is that you could have had all 12 of Bnei Yisrael engaging in Diba. Right? All those years ago, Yosef started out with the Diba, Bnei Yisrael, they committed this terrible sin. You could have had all of the representatives of the tribes on board. And what would God have done then? If Kalev and Yehoshua hadn't stood up against the Diba, what would the punishment have been? It would have been a lot worse than 40 years in the desert. Maybe God would have thrown his hands up right then and said, that's it. That's mm-hmm. the end of the Torah. That's the end of the journey. But because they stood up,
you think maybe the son of Yehuda and the son of Yosef standing up together gave God this sense of, okay, you know what? It's not irredeemable. Something can come of this. Because look, we fixed this part, right? There's still issues, but we fixed this part.
Right. I don't need another 400 years. I don't need another 4 generations. I need one more generation with these two people as the foundation that are going to seed the mm-hmm. next generation. I need my next generation, the generation that wow. enters the land, to be the Yehudas and the Yosefs, the people who stand against Diba, the brothers who stand together.
Beth, that is really, really, really cool. That is really cool. Thank you so, so much for showing this, because this was incredibly interesting. Very, very cool.
Wow, I hope you really found that as fun to listen to as I did. You may have noticed that unlike other Aleph Beta presentations, Beth and Rifki aren't making one clear argument about what the meaning of these parallels are. And that's okay. Beth actually was in the early stages of research when she presented this to Rifki. So what you're hearing is a lot of evidence, things that are for sure there in the text. But the takeaways, the meaning, is sort of still in a speculative stage. What we do here at Aleph Beta is spend many, many, many more hours charting the parallels, noticing where they're the same, where they're a little bit different. Both the story of the spies and the story of Joseph have 10 quote-unquote bad guys, 2 quote-unquote good guys, but they're not the same people in both stories. Yehuda's role changes. So what are we to make of that? There are many, many other changes between the two stories. So what we typically do is we chart them, we notice them, and from the similarities and differences, theories emerge as to the meaning of these two stories. I'm going to hold off on giving you a meaningful takeaway here. Because the truth is, Rabbi Forman and I picked up on these parallels that Beth had shown Rivki. We took it in our own direction for Tisha B'Av video, which is available on our site at alephbeta.org. But instead, I kind of want to take you to take Beth's direction at the end and to meditate on these parallels. Explore them for yourselves. See what else you can find. And ask yourself the question, why, in telling us the story of the spies, does the Torah want you to be thinking about the sale of Joseph? The Torah, as we say, is a commentary on itself. What do you think that commentary is telling us? As always, we're curious and eager to hear your thoughts. If you want to share them with us, send us an email at info@alephbeta.org. We can't wait to see what you come up with. Please subscribe to Into the Verse wherever you get your podcasts and tell your friends and family about us. That really helps us to grow. And if you enjoy this podcast, please give us a rating or even write a brief review to help other listeners find us. Now, the 6 most recent episodes of Into the Verse are free, completely free, to listen to on your podcast app, while the archive of back episodes is a perk for paid members on the Aleph Beta website. Aleph Beta members also receive each week's Into the Verse transcript directly to their email to print or read online. That's handy dandy for Shabbat reading. You can find much more outstanding Torah on Aleph Beta's website at ab.video. Join the growing number of our paid subscribers who have full access to thousands of videos and podcasts on the weekly Parsha, holidays, and big ideas in Judaism. This episode was recorded by Beth Lesh and Rivki Stern. When this episode originally aired on Aleph Beta, it was edited by Rivki Stern. Into the Verse editing was done by Beth Lesh. Our audio editor is Hilary Gutman. Our CEO and editorial director is me, Imu Shalev. Thank you so much for listening.